Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. My name is Paul, joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
What up?
G'day.
So thank you for your patience, everybody. We have been off a couple weeks. There was Adepticon, which we're going to talk about in great detail. What an amazing event. Switch to Milwaukee from being just outside of Chicago. A fun time. I think there was some reservations about that. People were going to, like the organizers were like, are people going to come? And is it going to still feel like Adepticon? Well, we'll tell you. Did they come and did it feel like Adepticon? And then I had some other work travel the week after, which basically bumped everything out. So apologize for not having shows out the last couple of weeks. We're back at it. Should be in the swing of things leading up to the Warhammer Open Dallas next. Hold tight. I mean, lots of cool stuff to talk about. How are y'all doing this?
Oh, I'm doing really good. I did not have FOMO for once this year for Adepticon because I was busy doing a team tournament. So, you know, best of both worlds.
Yeah, well, how'd you do?
My team came in third place out of 16 teams. We were very shocked, actually.
Congratulations.
Awesome. It was very, very competitive. And I would say three of our five folks on the team are very casual players, as myself included. So we were really shocked that we did so well. I really think it was due to our fearless leader, Alex McDougall, that we did so well. But it was super fun. Super fun.
Congratulations.
Nah, you carried him. He's never won anything. He's nobody.
Well, briefly before the show, we were talking about you jumped on that landmine of tough matches sometimes, and that takes, this is not any hyperbole, that takes a lot of heart in team events because somebody has to go out there and take it on the chin and still do it, maybe do it again the next round. You could have a series of hard games, and sometimes that is just punishing to the personal morale of people, and that impacts the team. It did not impact your team.
There was only one game that I got 0 points. And that was a really rough matchup. I knew going into it that I was probably not going to get any points. But I got points in every other matchup, and I got a lot of points in three of my games. So, feeling pretty good about it, actually.
Rocking and rolling. What were you playing?
Yeah. Imperial Guard.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Not six Robledorns, though. Oh, I only had one. I only had
that's
one.
Where I was going. I'm sorry. You caught me.
Well, still, congratulations to you and the team. That is actually awesome. Really awesome to hear.
Thank you.
Adepticon. So we did some streaming from Adepticon. And Red, not to jump the gun, I'll tell you, you were doing some organizing, some judging in the Kill Team events. And we streamed to Twitch and YouTube. And if anybody watched us over there, thank you very much on the Games Workshop Twitch and YouTube. Turns out YouTube cuts out after 12 hours of streaming and only uploads the first 12 hours. We will seek to make that better the next time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we can tell you who won those games. I'm sure you've already found out. If you've already figured it out, if you're watching those streams, do you have a good time, Adam, when we were there?
Oh yeah, yeah. I like how you said we did some some.
It's a marathon for y'all every time.
Unbelievable. So the way it works is that there's a multi-hundred player GT that starts on the Thursday, which has four rounds in one day and then has a cut to a top 32. And that top 32 then plays four games the next day, cutting down to a top two, which then plays on the Saturday evening after three games of the team event. So we had 3 days of four rounds a day, 14 plus hours of streaming on the desk, on the mic, in the trenches, so to speak, like Tanya was in her team event. It's a hell of a ride. And I will say,
I loved it. We
did a great job.
Yeah.
I loved it in the moment. And then afterwards, I'm like, please don't make me do that again, knowing I had to get up and do it the next day. Keep in mind, my passion burns just as bright as Paul's, but I am somehow more younger than Paul, but far less
vivacious.
Spry? I don't know.
Don't know. Maybe it's the jet lag. Maybe it's the fact that I arrived.
That's what I was going to mention.
Tuesday,
you did travel half a world away.
Yeah, jet lag will do it. jet lag or that.
Nah, it's just it's Paul literally bathing in the fountain of youth prior to every event.
So I will say, you know, this is also a pretty, I guess, an accurate description here. The vibe of that event keeps you enthusiastic. Like, everybody there is jazzed.
It is hard really to, nice. Like, to let the candle... It's hard for the candle to burn low when you've literally got, like, 5,000+ people just there because of games that you love, enjoy, identify with. I can't think of many other, like... buildings in the world that I can walk into and guarantee I have more in common with someone in that building than anybody on the street. Like, just a baseline, we like so much of the same stuff. I could just walk up to a stranger, poke him in the arm and be like, tell me your top three favorite things in the world. And I bet you like 2 out of 3 of them are the same as mine.
Don't quote me on this number, but I did hear it from someone that I believe to be very much in the know about the gate of the convention. I believe there were almost 10,000.
I was going to say, did someone steal them? The gates? No, that's fine.
That's they got it, let everybody in because there's no doors. They were very secure. But it was, I think, over 8,000, just to experience Adepticon, which is a record number for them. And so, like, here's what I alluded to in the beginning of the show, was that it very much still felt like Adepticon in the convention. The one thing that I did have, if I were critiquing anything at all, they're in the center of a city. And the hotels are all kind of spread out. And so if you had, you know, people staying in different pockets in different hotels. And so if you're going to be hanging out and getting some of that vibe, you might need to coordinate, you know, after the convention hours, you used to just be able to go into the main lobby of the hotel. And there was always people down there always playing some kind of games or whatever. Now you just might have to coordinate.
But in saying that, like, there was a lot of, so I love Chicago, but Schaumburg never felt like Chicago. It never felt like you were. Like, if you wanted to go into downtown, it was usually an hour either way, give or take, depending on how you did it. A very expensive Uber as well, because PT is not a dang thing out there. Whereas in the middle of Milwaukee, we could just walk literally 5 to 10 minutes in any direction, find food, music, you know, nightlife. It was that I would say
a coffee shop, you know, like,
exactly. That I would say is a bonus.
The Bronze Fonz.
Yes, we went and saw the Bronze Fonz, didn't we? We went to a spy. Bar. We also went to an old Prohibition speakeasy, which is fantastic. So we got a bit of nightlife. We got a bit of what Milwaukee has to offer. And I gotta say, I quite like Milwaukee. I like the vibe.
It was a little. So I'd never been to Milwaukee before, and the thing that struck me is that it was incredibly quiet in the city.
Chill.
Like, even in the,
it was super chill. Yeah, even like Friday night, it was like tame, which I like.
That may be their spring break or something, like for schools. I don't know. So maybe they were just maybe organically fewer people that might have been having a reason to come into the city because they were off on vacation or something. But it felt like not slow, not sleepy or whatever, just chill. Like, you could, you know, if you wanted to go out and enjoy things, you could leisurely instead of competing or whatever against other people.
Yeah, exactly right. And also, it was nice just being like, who's this next pack of people that are coming into this bar? Ah, it's a pack of nerds. Yep. Who's them? The pack of nerds. Those guys are there? Pack of nerds. Yep. Awesome. It was lovely.
And that Safe House place, not sponsored or anything, of course, but it was right near, we stayed at the St. Kate's. And the St. Kate, that hotel had something going on in the bar every night.
Every night.
Almost. Look, if we didn't stream for 15 hours a day, it would have been like, cool, you know, but since we did, it was like, this is kind of obnoxious.
I mean,
too much.
There was a lot going on. It was like, it wasn't just like a chill, kind of like blues vibe or anything like that. It was like always something, and there was a ton of people in there, and they were all having a great time.
Yeah, they were. Seemed like it was the place to be. It was like the happening spot. But right down the way from us was that Safe House place that we went. And you need a password.
What happens when you don't have the password, Paul?
If you don't have the password, they do a security check on you. They want to make sure that you're not some type of dangerous operative from an opposing force. And so you have to go through a bit of an exercise to be let into the place.
So you and I went there twice, not having the password twice. Once it was just me and you. What kind of test did they put us through? What rigorous evaluation did we undergo?
So the security test to make sure that we were on the right side was they had us perform a series of maneuvers known as the ballerina maneuvers.
We had to dance like ballerinas until the door person was satisfied. We weren't agents of the enemy.
And look, we gave it our all. Like, it was,
we freaking nailed it, mate. We got a cheer when we walked in. When we walked in through the secret door, people were like, hey, you guys got right into it. Like, more than into it. Like, we're just born to do it. Right?
If you plan on going here and don't want spoilers, fast forward for the next 30 seconds. But, all right, 3, 2, 1, fast forward for 30 seconds, Ben, at this point, is that there's cameras that show you in your security exercise in that show you into the bar.
Yeah. Awesome. So everyone in the bar gets to see you acting like a goose to get in.
This is a restaurant. It's more of a restaurant than a bar. Yeah. There's also a bar there.
It's two bars.
Yeah.
It's a magician bar as well.
Yeah. They do close-up magic.
Yeah. It was a good time.
It was a great time. Yeah, yeah. So we had to take the rest of the crew back the next day, and we led one of our folks with us. I was like, look, this is the password. Just go up there and deliver it confidently, and they'll let us in.
And what'd you tell him to say?
What would I say?
I can't remember.
The only password that you ever need is from Ace Ventura, and it's New England clam chowder.
Whatever. He was the youngest fella in our crew, and me and Paul were in the lead walking up, and I'm like, you have to tell Tucker this is the password. He has to be the one to let us in. Lined him right up for it.
Yeah, he delivered it confidently. It was not the password. We had to go through the exercise again. But it was a nice team bonding exercise. So who won those games? So the team tournament was won by like lots. They have lots of them for the team tournament. It's truly a spectacle. And we talked about it, the team tournament, a lot, but it's like one of those events that you have to plan for in advance if you plan on doing well in most of the categories. And the teams show out. It's an amazing experience. You got to see some of those armies on stream. It's a very difficult tournament to win things. And then in the singles, it ended up being Yanari versus Ultramarines, Yellow Ultramarines. And the Ultramarines won due to a time issue helped by the judges. And anytime a clock is involved, there's always opinions to be involved. But the judges were on hand to help walk through the process. And the first couple of turns, which you can see on YouTube and you can see the whole thing on Twitch, were a lot of tactical and strategic play. Unfortunately, it took a long time to get a lot of the game up. But, you know, still does not in any way overshadow the effort from all the players that played and tried to get to the top two. And sometimes that is what's going to happen with two players that really want to win and are playing the game to that level. That's one of the reasons the clocks exist and one of the reasons the judges exist. And they made the call right there.
There was no other games going on in the hall. It was just that game. And I remember, if anyone goes and watches it, you will enjoy the delicious ASMR that is Paul and I trying to talk quietly enough to keep you entertained whilst not letting the players hear what we're saying.
We got to a level 7 hype train, and I'm not sure what that means, but level 7 seems like, you know.
I think level 8's the highest.
Very good.
Yeah. That's very good hype train.
Okay,
I think the most I ever have gotten on Twitch is like level 5.
No, seriously, like a level 7 hype train is a big deal.
Well, we'll take it. Nice. Yeah, while we were whispering, while we were basically golfing our way through. But Red, you got to see more of the hall than we did. What was going on?
True. Yeah, I wasn't, as awesome as y'all's job is, I was not chained to the stream for 14 hours like you were.
Wouldn't have me in the way, by the way.
You are definitely locked in there. You are. Well, but that's something, you know, in a lot of these events, it's a thing, right? Like y'all are committed to that. And even, you know, my first time at Adepticon, I played in one tournament. I played, I think, in the GT, which was 2 days. And then I played in the team tournament, which was 2 days. And that was the whole event. And I remember I didn't really get away. I didn't get to see a lot of the stuff. And so there's tons of awesome stuff there. And this was, I think, the most vendors they've had now that they're in this new venue. And they're going to have even more. Like, they had a wait list of vendors. And there's a lot of great stuff out there. Just to look around and see what they had. And GW had an amazing setup. Like, and they weren't even in the vendor hall. They were set up, like, in the gaming hall. So, like, they were, I mean, I think the first night they were open till midnight. like the store was, just, you know, an amazing amount of stuff.
The brand new event only models for this year.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It was Skaven and a Gene Stealer Colt character. It was pretty cool, pretty awesome. This was my debut Kill Team TO event, and I was more like learning under the wing of Travis, who is like a well-known, world-renowned Kill Team player. Him and Jason was there playing in the events. They lead the Just Another Kill Team podcast that is is great, because honestly, about 6 months ago, I started getting into Kill Team, and I used their podcast to kind of help kind of get me into the meta, which has helped me
really know their stuff too, by the way. Like, that's in and out.
Yeah, well, and it's such a thing. You know, we've talked about all these we've talked about Age of Sigmar and how, I mean, I really like especially this new fourth edition and how they've implemented cover and the turns. But Kill Team is just this other, it's not just small 40K. It is its own game in its own right. It has its own discrete verbiage and jargon, and like, it's really good. I really like it. You can't just, you know, say, well, I play 40K, so I'm going to just jump right into Kill Team. It doesn't work like that. And it has its own strengths and weaknesses and an awesome community. This was a great way for me to really jump headfirst into the deep end with this, and to also get the mentorship and coaching from Travis, who knows so much about it, for me to really be able to spend this whole weekend. The first day we did pods, so it was like a RTT. And there were four different RTTs going on at once, which is pretty cool. And then the next day was the team tournament, which was pretty cool. They had two boards put together, and you were playing at the same time. So like, you could actually move over and help your partner.
It was so one of the boards, Galadark, and the other open.
So yeah, so the first day, because we were waiting for some stuff to come in, the first day was Octarius, which is the old one from second edition. We're in third edition Kill Team right now. It was Octarius and Volcus. Volcus is the new stuff. And so Volcus has, like, when you buy the 2024 approved Kill Team set, there's like set up like specific competitive layouts for Volcus, much like there is, you know, for Pariah Nexus right now. And so Volcus had setups, and then Travis, of course, his extensive knowledge, he was able to set up great, but they were relatively competitive boards that don't necessarily have setups. But he knows how to make it like dynamic and to make sure that where the objectives are and how terrain set up, and it was pretty awesome. So that was the first day. Second day, Dan was running Underdark. We spent a lot of time that first couple days setting up Into the Dark, the Galadark terrain, which is amazing stuff. I mean, I honestly got so much hands-on experience getting that ready for this that I've now put all my stuff together, because I had two sets just here at the house that I was like, man, I don't even know how to get into this. But now I've spent so much time setting up 14 tables of it. I think Dan set up 12. I'm super comfortable with it now. And it's such a good thing, because the way that, I mean, it's, I don't know if anyone here has gotten a chance to play Boarding Actions.
No, but it's the same thing as Boarding Actions, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah. And there's similarities to some of the rules and how you're confined. Like, you can't go outside of the walls are impassable, obviously, but like, you got to work through doors and things like that. So it was really awesome. So the team, the doubles was Volcus and Galadark put together. And then the third and fourth day was a Kill Team GT, which we had just under 90 people, which is, I mean, a sizable Kill Team tournament from everything I understand. And so for that to kind of be my first deal, and admittedly, there's a couple mistakes I made, but again, I appreciated Travis was able to catch it before I did too much damage, and then we were able to keep going. And honestly, the community was great and had an awesome weekend. Pumped about Kill Team. I'm going to TO kind of a learn to play Kill Team deal in my local area at the end of this month. And my boys are playing it, and we're having a good time getting some stuff together. You got to think about
hooked.
And some of it's an easy translation, right? I play Imperial Agents. I just take my Inquisitor. Imperial Agents is essentially made up of three to four kill teams, right? And so, like, I've already got half of it. So it jumping into it has been pretty fun, and the system of it is, I mean, it's good. And some of the stuff, you know, you think about it, you've got one, I mean, maybe no more than 12 models. Sometimes you may have more depending on the loadouts of things, but you don't play, if you're playing a smaller team, or I say non-elite team, you have like 11 to 12 models. And so like the amount of effort that people are able to put into that squad and like the setup of it and everything, it's really, really good. Like there's a lot more agency to the individual models as you would expect as you move into the skirmish format, but like just the paint jobs and the hobby effort that people are putting into it. And like a lot of, I'd say out of the almost 90 people, like a third of them, it was like their first GT event that they were ever attending. And that's awesome. I mean, like really to have something like Adepticon, which I really do think is this awesome, you know, standard setting event. And for that to be someone's first real like big competitive deal, I hope that you know it's everything that I feel it was for them too, because it pretty special, you know, for people to say, well, my first event was Adepticon 2025. So
That is pretty special. We get questions all the time about how do I get in 40K or whatever. And Kill Team is not like, I like, it's not 40K light. It is its own game, but it still very much captures the feel of the 41st millennium and everything that is Warhammer. So if 100%. Your models are a barrier, then Kill Team certainly is a way to jump in and only have a Kill Team, 10 models to manage, paint, play, buy, you know, whatever the struggle is. And then you still feel like you are in the gritty, grim dark.
I mean, and the factions all do, they do such a good job with the rules of really capturing the feel of these factions and kind of how they play into it, the characters of them. And you're right, like it is, it's one of those things where it's easier to get into because you only need, you know, a box of models, and they come with all the counters, and you can buy the cards to go on top of it. But once you start getting into it, the depth of the game is so much more. And so it's cool because you can start off light and then really step into, like, you can walk straight from the 3 foot into the pool right to the 9 foot and real quick. And so it's pretty cool. Pretty great system. Big fan.
All right, let's take a quick break and talk about some of the cool stuff coming up with the Warhammer.
Yep.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everyone. By the time you are hearing this, pre-orders will soon be up if they are not already for the new Emperor's Children models. And let's talk about some must-buys. If this is your faction or things that you feel like you want to get on the table ASAP, this stuff will sell out. Like you have to imagine this is the first new models for this range and outside of a single figure in a long, long time. So I feel like they're going to sell out. But I think we may have a controversial take here. Like if you had to get one thing and only one thing, I'm saying Lucis Eternal.
Lucy is, I think, apart from the battle line units, and I got to say, they have like top tier battle line. A lot of people look at their battle line units as being like, I'll take a unit of intercessors just to sticky and sit my home field. No, Emperor's Children, you build around the battle line, which is kind of what I want 40K to be. I want my battle line to be the mainstays of my list rather than just being the chuck one in if I got points at the end kind of facet that they can become. And so that's kind of in keeping with Chaos Space Marines and the Identity Chaos Spaces, where you do end up taking, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4 units of legionaries along with your cultists. So they have that density there. But Lucius goes in every list, every detachment, every archetype, everything. Lucius just fits them all. He's like the evergreen character that does not matter how you're deciding to play your Emperor's Children. He's always going to be good.
Flawless Blades, probably the next on the list. But what do y'all think?
I think we have some Flawless Blade stands here. I am not one of them. I can see the merit of a single unit of six to gain respect in heavy melee matchups, because one of the failure points of the profiles available to Emperor's Children is the AP. They actually have a relatively low AP across the board, usually wielding AP1, AP2. If you're running into Grey Knights, Custodes, stuff that operate off a 2+ base, you're kind of going to struggle and go into periods where you're just going to spike up, spike down, left, right, and it can become very inconsistent. And so one unit of Flawless Blades really cinches that up and gets some respect from your opponent. But I'm much more of a Noise Marine enjoyer. I'm like, Windmill Slam, 12 minimum Noise Marines and everything all the time. Send it to Rhinos, Cacophony Lords, do not hold back.
So I was actually going to win you back with the Lord Cacophonist. But in That's my fair. Opinion, as you'll see, though, that we haven't said Fulgrim yet.
It's true.
Okay. We'll go opinions on the model and then opinions on his rules. What have we got to offer?
Okay. Opinion on the model. He's beautiful, as he should be. I wish the wings were bigger.
Fair.
Yeah. That's like really my only... I'm not a big fan of the face either, but yeah, the wings for me, that's like my only real critique. I want Marathi's wings on.
Probably doable.
You probably could. That's an expensive kit bash, but you could probably do it. That
is probably worth it though at the end if that's the vibe you're going for.
Yeah.
the reason I say Fulgrim, if you are, like, if you're being, say, strategic with your purchasing, but still wanted to get something for your force here, I think that Fulgrim, this is not a critique, I actually kind of like this, is not necessarily an auto include in every list. And that could be because of points, or maybe, you know, you don't need that the pressure that he applies, you know, in your list other ways.
It's interesting that we seem to have almost two design philosophies that have been adopted with Primarchs in this edition, where you have the pretty much like you wouldn't play Ultramarines without Rebute, and you wouldn't play World Eaters, you know, without Angron. But then you have...
That's because the loyal listening to that security and the chaos people are like, you're not going to tell me what to do, Dad. You know.
But then you have the other facet, which where on the other... And Mortarian's probably in the middle here. Sorry, Magnus. You wouldn't play T-Suns without Magnus. You would never play T-Suns without Magnus. But... Then you have the Lion and now Fulgrim, who I think exist in a has to be the right build, right archetype, right mission structure, and then very good.
Which otherwise, I do think is good, by the way, because I like the diversity in which you can build a list. And if you feel obligated to always have, 300+ points is just dedicated to this all the time, it kind of locks in the rest of your list without you really knowing it.
Yeah, it builds in a focus point that everything... So if you're going to bring something that's that many points, you need to have it adequately supported. In the case of when I bring the Lion, I'm usually bringing a Phobos Librarian and a unit of Infiltrators, and then they exist to have Lone Operative themselves and then give him Lone Operative, and they become a little self-contained nuisance bubble that can hold down like half the table by themselves because it's a very hard series of questions to answer. And Fulgrim could do similar things. If you're playing into like a very shooty meta where you just can't fall back, can you ice a game? Like you just yeets across the table with advance and charge, it goes straight into your frontline screen, kills one thing, piles into another thing and be like, if you don't fall back, you're screwed. That's the kind of stuff that could really tilt a matchup. But it needs the right time and place for it to be effective. Like you play Fulgrim against World Eaters, and they're like, none of this matters. I hit you harder than you hit me. So, meh. Like, meh. You know, here we are.
It's an amazing model, though. And, of course, you're going to want to get it because you're Primarch. I'm only talking about the folks that, you know, they really want to be discerning. You're not going to, you know, necessarily auto-click everything, which... Well, I can see the temptation to do that, especially with Primarch.
Much the same with every other faction that has got a Primarch. It doesn't matter about the rules, baby. If you love the faction, you're going to get it and you're going to play it.
Yeah, you're going to paint it up. It's going to be a centerpiece.
Exactly. Whether you take it to local GT, major, whatever that may be, that's up for discussion. But you are going to have a play around with that Primarch. There's
too far in the trenches. I think that Lucius the Eternal is like, number one, like you're gonna want him, you're gonna put him in every list, and I'll graduate the Lore Cacophonist up to right under that of the things to get.
If I was to give people a core, like if you could go out and get two of the army boxes, you're almost done. You're straight up almost done.
Yeah,
you've got all the Noise Marines you're gonna need. You've got all the battle line you're gonna need. I'm of the opinion you want a minimum of one unit of the infiltrating ones. I don't know what they're called. And you want two minimum units of the scouty ones. Don't know what they're called. I just call them the scouty ones.
The tormentors.
Those guys.
The infractors.
And the other ones. Yeah, exactly. See? Sorted. But minimum one squad of the infractors. Are they the scouting ones?
The stuff that is going to be up on pre-order for here are going to be the Flawless Blades, Exultant, Cacophonous, Lucius the Eternal, and Fulgrim.
You want one Lucius and two, if not three, of each of the characters, because you want the option to have three units of six Noise Marines with three Cacophonous Lords. You want the option to have three of the scouting Tormentors in Rhinos with their respective Lords. You want, or put one in the infiltrating unit and have it just be a deterrent to people to come to try and take away your expansion objectives. I think the fact that, so for the first time, I think they're not really hampered by having a small initial model release, which I do think was a bit more of a nuisance on release for things like T-Suns, who were just like, I have very expensive Rubrics, very expensive Scarab Occult Terminators. So there's, and Magnus. And so it's very cheap for me to get the start in my army, but then when I put my army on the table, I haven't got anything in my army. Emperor's Children won't have that problem. You can just take a bunch of boys in boxes.
You're talking about rhinos and potentially land raiders and stuff. And also, regular old Demon Prince, the walking Demon Prince, I think is still a bit of a juggernaut, essentially. You know, amazing model if you don't have one of those yet. I know it's not, you know, the new hotness of the release, but, you know, don't forget about some of these things also that is available and will be probably a mainstay in Europe.
Mm. I mean, there are some beautiful little combos that I could tell you about that would, you know, possibly influence you into buying some Fiends as well. The best shooting in the book is, and the best Noise Marine build you can make, is a unit of three Fiends and a unit of six Noise Marines with a Cacophonous Lord in the Demon Kin detachment, because then you get crit fives on your Noise Marines, and oh boy, they just kill everything. And then the Fiends play defense. If someone tries to charge and shut down your Noise Marines, your Heroic intervene with the Fiends and eat them.
Yeah, so the Carnival of Excess, I think, is what you're talking about, to get the Legion of Excess units in your army.
Correct.
There are some great choices to take in this book. I think it is absolutely going to make Emperor's Children players, I think, pretty happy. I know a lot of them are jazzed. And if you're curious as to why we keep talking about the Lord Cacophonist, it is, while this model is leading a unit, range weapons equipped by this model have the sustained hits one ability. So that's a lot of shots.
Yeah, that's so many shots.
And then their Doom Sire. You know, so all with a 2+ save, 4+ invulnerable save, you can put them in Emperor's Children Terminator squads and Noise Marines. So very versatile. I think it is a must-have.
Mm.
And then Lucius the Eternal is just a beast. With
so good,
yeah, just a single walking around character, if you want to be, with 2+ save and a 4+ invulnerable save, and a challenge worthy of skill. Each time this model makes an attack that targets a character, monster, or walker unit, you can reroll the hit roll and reroll the wound.
Solid.
Very good.
Dueler's Hubris at the start of the fight phase. If this model is not leading a unit, the units at the end of the phase, it has the fight's first ability. So can be walking. We saw a lot. Like, look at those, every stream game from Adepticon. Almost every list on those tables had one or two characters that were on 40-millimeter base, not necessarily even lone ops all the time, just walking around doing stuff, creating problems for their opponents. And this guy has been creating problems for 10,000 years.
Yeah,
and will continue to do so.
He has a lot of similar flavor to Mephiston, if I could be so bold.
Okay, I'm listening.
Where it's for a similar priced character, it's an above rate of toughness, wounds, and durability, while still being a one-shot kill to other opponents' utility units and a threat to larger vehicles, characters, etc.
Yeah,
like, he has a chance to go in and one-shot Khalgar. I mean, not through the Feel No Pain, but go in one-shot Abaddon out of a unit.
Deletes Aspect Warriors, like nobody's business.
Yes.
I mean...
Yeah, scouts Aspect Warriors. He'll go in and threaten to kill a transport, like, straight up. He'll just go in and threaten to do that. Also, while being lone operative, having access to a plethora of different enhancing stratagems in different detachments, depending on what that may be. Like, you take him in the coterie, where that's the one where you got to call your shot about how many kills you're going to, you know... devote to Slaanesh per battle round. And after a couple, he's just rerolling once to hit, once to wound. Just the entire, for the rest of the game. And so he's just extremely, extremely consistent. In addition, he's the only lone op you got access to in the book. And so by dint of that, it makes him exponentially more.
You can kind of get half a lone op with the Demon Prince, right?
You can, yeah. Demon Prince gets lone op within 3 inches of other things. But yeah, you got to take a two-unit combo. He can just Yeah, lone operative on my objective on the side there. Cool.
Number one, loses the Eternal.
Yep.
That's the endorsement if you are ready to click
that's it.
When you are hearing this. That's our show this week. It was awesome coming off of Adepticon. Next week, we're going to be get kind of back to our normal fare, back to the normal routine. There will be an episode next week. I really appreciate y'all's patience with us as we have been doing all this other stuff, getting back to it. Y'all got anything to add before we wrap up?
All good.
Love Milwaukee. Big fan. Can't wait to go back.
We'll see y'all next week, everybody.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.